Tell your ma, tell your pa, gonna send you back to Arkansas. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A podcast for those who find Medicare murky. And now, fresh from his morning nap, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, here we are again, ladies and gentlemen. It's another exciting episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, brought to you by, on behalf of the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. The 2022 edition is out on Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. If you go to Amazon and put in Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, you're going to see the new version of the book. It is available in four different editions or four different versions. That would be Kindle ebook, paperback, hardcover for the first time ever, and Audible book. The Audible book is finally there. It has been finally processed by the troubled ACX component of Amazon. They're always slower than they promise they're going to be, but at least they didn't take 4 months like they did last year. They only took about 2 months. And the only other problem that occurred with that was that when the Audible book was placed on sale on the same page with all of my other 2022 editions of the book, it somehow erased 220 some reviews that were there for your reading pleasure. So now people can click stars and they don't have to write things anymore. So now there are three reviews. There are 2 5-star reviews and a third review that's a 4-star. I don't know what that person's problem was because they did not write a review explaining it. However, they are they robbed me of like a 100% 5-star review thing. So if you buy the book and if you think it merits a 5-star review, I would appreciate it if you would go back to the site where you bought the book and click the button that tells them this is worthy of a 5-star review. It's a lot easier than having to write a review, although I think the written reviews carry a little more weight with people who are looking for reading material, and especially people that are looking to be educated. This is a Medicare how-to book that will take you a little over an hour to read. And it will, unless you move your lips while you read, then it might take maybe an hour and 15 minutes. And it's going to tell you almost everything you're ever going to need to know about Medicare. Some people have very complex situations, and this book might not answer every one of their questions. But for the most part, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022 is going to explain everything you need to know about Medicare without taxing your brain too much. Speaking of taxing, every once in a while, I like to tax Randy Carson's brain by asking him to play our 30-second radio spot. And the way I ask him to do that is to impose complete silence on the podcast. So that's what I'm going to do right now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that. There is a synopsis of the various ways that you can access the knowledge that I'm trying to share with the Medicare eligibles that are listening to this podcast. So speaking of Randy, who is up and around because obviously he just played that 30-second radio spot, Randy, are you ready to work today?
I am. Well, as you can see by the background,
yes, I can.
I am out on the East Coast, so actually I got up 2 hours ahead of time normally, so it's almost like 105 out there. And as you see, it's we've had a bit of snow over the night.
Why is the weather so much more disgustingly horrible on the same day, just a couple thousand miles away? Because in Arizona, we're going to be kissing 100 degrees pretty quick, I think.
I know. And bottom line is I literally, it was so cold when I went out to pick up the newspaper. I had to put on my mucklucks.
It's interesting that you were able to arrange for a newspaper subscription on this on the same day that you arrived on the East Coast. That's very efficient of them.
They are. There is. Well, I had to do it because I just have to keep up on the news. Otherwise, I don't know what's going on in the world, and that's probably a good thing.
Well, looking at the out the windows of your current location, which I understand is the East Coast headquarters of Medicare for the Lazy Men, there's nothing going on out there. It must be miserable, and everybody's hiding inside.
Oh, it's snowing, and you can see the snow blowing, and just a miserable day.
Absolutely,
I'm not even going to go out for lunch.
So, what are you going to do about your mucklucks? You're just going to take them off and throw them in the corner?
Yep. Yeah, they're all wet. They're all wet and damp. So there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse than a damp muckluck.
Well, no, I agree with that, and especially if your newspaper. If you've retrieved your newspaper, you've got something constructive to do for a couple of hours. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure glad you were able to make the connection so that we can have our podcast recorded today, because that doesn't look like the kind of weather that's conducive to, excellent podcast content. I would be depressed.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because given the fact that I'm from the Midwest.
Yep.
If I look it out and see that type of thing outside, it just puts a chill down my spine.
Yeah, you're facing away from it, so you're not burdened by the sight of the snow and the ice and all that. I am forced to stare at it. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to read, and that way I don't have to look at your background. I'm going to be reading more of the article that I started a couple of episodes ago. And the title of that article is Major Insurers, meaning major insurance companies, are scamming billions from Medicare, according to whistleblowers. So I got through part of that. This is another one of these 52-page behemoths. It's like a family Bible, little teeny print and page after page after page.
Yep.
So I'm going to skip some of it, because it started out when I started the article back in that long ago episode, maybe a week ago. It discussed what insurance companies are doing to get extra money for their Medicare Advantage plans. In other words, the Medicare Advantage plan has to accept everybody. And so when they sign people up, some of the people are sicker than others, and the Medicare Advantage plans have figured out how they can get extra money from the federal government. And that is to say, hey, these people that we've signed up are sicker than average, so you should pay us more to cover these sick people and their increased medical expenses. They represent an increased risk to the insurance company. And so the federal government dutifully does that, which I think is a big, huge mistake. And the central character in this article is a woman named Teresa Ross, who worked for a company that was located, I don't know, in Minnesota someplace. It was in the Midwest, and eventually it was acquired by Kaiser Permanente. But they list the major Medicare Advantage plan carriers that are pretty much at fault for doing this kind of stuff. She became a whistleblower, and her company was trying desperately to stay within the law of not taking whistleblowers out and shooting them behind the office in the parking lot. And so they hired a psychologist to come to the office and evaluate her. And I'm using air quotes when I say evaluate. And the psychologist's conclusion was that she was a weirdo and that nobody liked her. But in reality, this was the company's marching orders for the psychologist to tell this woman that she was misguided in being a whistleblower and reporting that her employer, her company, was defrauding the federal government, along with presumably these other companies that, like United Healthcare, Anthem, and Cigna are mentioned in this article, along with Kaiser Permanente as being the big Medicare Advantage carriers, and they have falsified the seriousness of their clients' medical conditions in order to get extra money out of the federal government. So this woman is Teresa Ross, and she grew up outside Seattle. She's a math whiz in a family that kept busy with music lessons and school activities. Her father had a heart attack while she was in high school, and she spent a lot of time at the hospital pressing his doctors for information. If I had done that when my father had a heart attack, well, he never did, but I mean, that would have been, they would have kicked me right out of that hospital. The early exposure coupled with her mathematical acumen led Ross into a career in an obscure corner of the healthcare industry. In 1998, she arrived at a nonprofit insurer called Group Health Cooperative to lead a division building statistical models of patient risk. In the 2000s, these models became central to the growing Medicare Advantage industry. Money hinged on the illnesses that plans documented for their members. Traditional Medicare pays doctors and hospitals directly for each test or service. You may wonder why, if you wind up getting medical treatment, that they order a million tests. Part of that is defensive medicine so that lawyers cannot sue them for malfeasance. And part of it is because they get reimbursed for each thing that they tell you to do. And so might be why my doctor always gives me an EKG. I've never had a heart problem, but every year, you get an EKG, whether you want to or not. So anyway, the program will spend an average of $14,000. That's Medicare, spends an average of about $14,000 per enrollee this year. Now, through a process called risk adjustment, added diagnoses typically bump the payments by $1,000 to $5,000, sometimes as much as $10,000 per patient per year. It is meant to compensate insurers for taking on sicker patients and to discourage them from cherry picking healthy people. Healthcare companies developed increasingly sophisticated methods to maximize payments. A cottage industry of vendors emerged to help them. They mine data from patient charts, and they send staff to do health risk assessments in patients' homes, and they prod doctors to review potentially missed diagnoses. What they're looking for is any excuse to go to the federal government and point at a patient, a client of the plan, and say, this person is sicker than average. We want more money for the additional risk of covering them. And so this Teresa Ross said, the company that I had known to be ethical all of a sudden was not. She said she and her employer, Group Health, originally embraced the system as a way to identify patients who needed care but weren't getting it. And that's what I'm being told by some of the companies I'm contracted with. They say, oh, here, we're going to pay you $50 if you get your new client that you've just signed up with us to fill out all these forms. And then we'll pay you $50 and we'll give all kinds of free stuff to your clients. Well, what they do is they turn around and they go to the federal government. And they say, give us more money out of the treasury because this client looks like he may have a higher risk of medical expenses coming down the road. So it's not just digging for dollars, she said. It was improving care. That was the original goal of all this. Her whistleblower suit and the Justice Department complaint that followed described a growing pressure within the company to engineer higher risk scores for greater payments. She rebuffed one vendor called Leprechaun LLC, hired in 2008, that wanted to submit claims based on documentation that was clearly inadequate. So she's trying to ride herd on this and make sure that these people are performing the jobs that they're being paid to do in an honest and straightforward manner. They wound up this, her company, Group Help, wound up hiring a subsidiary company called Dixid. I don't know how to pronounce this. It's capital D, small x, capital I, capital D. So I'm going to call it Dixid. And they hired this to find additional data on patients that would generate revenue. And the company Dixid would get to keep 20% of any new revenue that it bought in from combing old patient charts to uncover misdiagnoses. And so her managers, Teresa Ross's managers, lit up when they realized how much money it might bring in. Reviewing 2 years of data, Dixid added thousands of potential diagnoses that increased Group Health's revenue by $32 million. This is an allegation by the United States Justice Department. And it's nice to see that the Justice Department is investigating these people for what sounds to me like fraud. Anyway, Ross checked Dixit's work. She found that 3/4 of the diagnostic codes it submitted for payment lacked proper documentation and didn't stand up to scrutiny, according to her complaint. The plan got paid for one patient's depression diagnosis, even though a physician said it had resolved the patient, and the patient now had an amazingly sunny disposition, according to Ross's complaint. It claimed another patient had kidney complications from diabetes, even after a doctor had explicitly ruled that diagnosis out. So Dixit would put illnesses from the problem list doctors maintained in electronic medical records, a section of the chart that sometimes contained old or resolved conditions. The company also used lab tests or other orders as proxies to infer diagnoses, even when clinicians had not documented the illnesses. For example, patients getting supplemental oxygen were assumed to have hypoxia, even though oxygen can be prescribed for less serious problems like sleep apnea. Later, Dixit would send physicians addendum forms to fill out to update charts with suggested diagnoses, paying them $25 to fill them out. This approach produced some unlikely results. One patient's depression was supposedly documented during a visit to an ophthalmologist, according to Ross's whistleblower complaint. In another case, a woman was coded for prostate cancer because when a married couple has any disease, both were assigned to that disease, she wrote. In an email, according to the Justice Department complaint, the Justice Department is looking into this and other complaints, so that's good. As Ross and her colleagues reviewed the submissions, they found this Dixit was adding diagnoses that doctors had made. Coders using medical codes are not allowed to diagnose anything. That's for doctors to do. So despite her protests, her employer adopted most of the coding policies that Dixit proposed. Ross and the Justice Department also allege this activity went on. Her manager spurned her and eventually brought in the psychologist that I referred to earlier. Ross's attorney at a whistleblower law firm experienced fits a pattern of tactics used to isolate corporate dissenters. This is where you get the whistleblower to start doubting herself. That's part of the corporate playbook that we see in these cases. So like I said, they called in a psychologist who tried to convince the whistleblower that she was nutty. So she wasn't dissuaded, though. In April of 2012, after 14 years in a job she loved, she filed her complaint in federal court she said that the company I had known to be ethical all of a sudden was not. They didn't care about whether or not it was compliant. At least in my eyes, they were more concerned about what the bosses were doing the end result of that activity was millions and millions of dollars. Attorneys for the company did not respond to multiple requests for comment. In a statement to the Buffalo News, I guess that's where this company was in Buffalo, New York, they said she was the unfortunate victim of an ancient lawsuit premised on inaccurate allegations. In legal filings seeking to dismiss the case, the defendants, the companies, characterized the dispute as a good faith disagreement over objectively ambiguous coding criteria. And they said the allegations from Ross and the Department of Justice don't meet the standards of the False Claims Act. So whistleblowers file their initial complaints under seal to give the government time to investigate and decide whether to proceed. In Ross's case, it lasted years. She left Group Health, her employer, the year after she filed her complaint and moved on to other jobs while her case sat sealed on the docket. Mostly unknown to her, other whistleblowers were coming forward with similar accounts at other companies, and federal investigators were building cases of their own. Both targeted some of the largest companies in the industry, which increasingly relied on Medicare Advantage as a source of profitable growth. In 2017, the Justice Department intervened in a case against United Healthcare, the largest Medicare Advantage provider. It sued Anthem in 2020. A whistleblower suit against Cigna was also unsealed that year. The companies are fighting these cases and have disputed allegations of wrongdoing. CVS Health and Humana have both disclosed investigations into their risk adjustment practices and said that they're cooperating with the probes. UnitedHealth and CVS declined to comment for this story. Representatives for Anthem, Cigna, and Humana did not respond to requests for comment. The Department of Justice declined to comment. Everybody declines to comment. In 2017, Group Health was acquired by Kaiser Permanente, the giant California-based HMO. Ross's own suit was unsealed in 2019 when the U.S. said it would not intervene, but would keep investigating. Let's see. Trying to skip the minutia and get down to the bottom line. And I think in this article, the bottom line is summarized in the last paragraph. The cases could take years to resolve. Teresa Ross, who struggled initially with her decision to come forward, has been heartened by the number of counterparts across the industry who raised similar concerns. It took a long time for the government to really understand what was happening to them in this space, she said. So there's another 52-page gut buster down the drain, but I like the concept of the federal government coming in and investigating the activities that we're being told about, Randy, because those billions, I think they said earlier in the article, it was like $100 billion since 2007. You know, it's about time that we taxpayers start wondering where the money is going, because the Medicare industry is sucking it dry, I think. And we're seeing that this is fraudulent behavior.
Well, you know, I have listened very intently to your discussion there, and I'm just shocked. I can't believe that a Medicare Advantage company would stoop to such trickery.
Ooh, boy, if you examine that statement very closely, I think you might say, ooh, maybe I shouldn't be shocked, because they have tactics that are all over the place. I mean, they're following you to your home and knocking on your door in the middle of the night.
I know. It's just, of course, I cannot believe that I'm from the Midwest, and I think people ought to be honest, but nothing about anything you described there is honest.
Absolutely not. And it's incredible to me that a whole bunch of people can get together and say, look, we discovered a new way to screw the federal government millions and millions and millions of dollars. Let's throw a Christmas party and celebrate this. And everybody gets a bonus and we all get to go home and start it all over again next year. This has been going on probably 15 years.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, the only guys making any money out of that?
Who's that?
The ambulance chasers.
Oh, yeah, those guys are always the ones on the of course, I have to tell you that they're probably fighting harder to earn their money than they used to, because I think there was a time when there weren't as many lawyers and the number of law school graduates in the country was strictly controlled.
Yeah.
And they weren't climbing all over each other to, file lawsuits. I sat on a jury one time. I'm pretty sure I told you this. With the sweetest little old lady in the world as the plaintiff. She had slipped and fallen on some ice in her parking lot during a snowstorm. So she was suing the snowplow guy, and she was suing the apartment complex. And so it was kind of an interesting thing, because somehow during the pre-trial maneuverings, the lawyer for the little old lady who had the word shyster tattooed on his forehead, I did not like this guy at all. He had maneuvered to have the lawyer for the apartment complex barred from disclosing certain facts. And as the jury, we were able to chit chat amongst ourselves once the trial was over. And I was able to discern that this lady took a shortcut instead of walking on the path that the apartment complex had paid to have cleared for her, which was a little bit longer. It would have taken her a few more steps to get to her door. She tried to climb over a pile of frozen snow in the parking lot.
Oh, for God's sakes.
And like I say, she was in her probably mid to late 70s, just a sweet little old lady. She shattered one of her legs by slipping on this frozen snow from prior snowfalls that had been plowed up. And, it was her fault that the whole thing happened. But yet this shyster on her behalf is suing an innocent apartment complex and this innocent schlub who was actually the guy that plowed the snow. Now, so we were admonished at the very end when we went to deliberate. The apartment complex lawyer said, look, if you feel as though you have to give her money for medical expenses, then we would suggest $10,000 would be sufficient. But we went in there and the people in the jury, well, first they elected me foreman. That was their first mistake. But they said, why don't we give her the 10 grand and get the heck out of here? And I said, she didn't have 10,000 of medical expenses. She's on Medicare. What's Medicare? Because they were all younger. Well, here's what Medicare does. It pays your medical bills for you. So she did not have any medical bills to speak of. And they said, oh, okay, well, let's give her a bupkis then. And the other thing was, should we find anything against the snowplow guy? No, because he was working on behalf of the apartment complex. So we came in, gave her nothing. And the lawyer, the shyster, actually wound up chasing me down the hall in the courthouse, yelling at me. You promised that you would give a settlement. And I said, I only promised I would give a settlement if you showed me fault. Well, that's immaterial. So,
oh yeah. Anyway. No fault in here anyway, but that's immaterial.
Well, the other weird thing is that a few years after that, the snowplow guy wound up on the other side of the court because he was convicted of hiring and aren't they all an undercover cop to try to knock off his girlfriend's husband. So that,
oh my God.
So I think he's still in jail, and that's fine with me because frankly, this guy had a zoo. Anybody that he had 8 acres in Batavia, Illinois, and he turned it into a zoo for wild animals. And he had lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. And he was always asking for high school kids to come over and volunteer to help, you know, shovel the dung out and feed the animals and stuff like that. And I swear to God, a guy who messes around with wild animals is suspect in my book anyway. And then, of course, he goes out and hires an undercover cop to try to bump off his girlfriend's husband. So it was an interesting case all the way around.
It sounds like, yeah. Well, I think they all are at some level, but yeah. That one might be up on the top three of interesting cases that were interrelated with a lot of different things.
Yeah, a lot of weird things happen. So anyway, enough of our 52-page article. Next time, we're going to go back to shorter, more easily digested content.
All righty. Okay. Well, the guys at the Buffalo Chip are going to love that. So,
oh, good.
You know, that'll be good. That'll be good for them. So anyway, we probably need to pack our tent, close up shop, because we are out of time. But there's a couple of things I always want to, you know, do at the close of the session that I don't ever want to forget. And those are send Doug mail, because he always enjoys it. dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Go order yourself at least a crate of paperbacks, because they are going to be great gifts. Whether it's birthdays, whether it's anniversaries, whether, you know, whatever it is, Christmas, whatever you celebrate, have plenty on hand. And as Doug said earlier, the audio is going to be hitting the world just any time now. And the Kindle has been out for quite a while. But anyway, definitely get to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and check it out, because you are going to be able to spend your money in a very, very positive way and save yourself some other money in the long term. So Doug is in his fortress of solitude for today, but I'm out on the East Coast watching it snow. Doug is snug as a bug in a rug, and I'm going to have a couple items that I'm going to leave as hanging chads for next time, and that is, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story about Radium Girls, if you've ever heard them.
Wow, they glow in
the dark. And then there's another little story about gaslighting.
Ah, okay.
So thank you for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. We like having every one of you with us, because without you, it's really no fun. Just me and Doug staring at each other across the table. And we get tired of that after a while. We really do.
We don't get any better looking, do we?
I'm not getting any better looking at all. I am going for a haircut this afternoon to get my ears lowered so I don't look like, you know, something the dog drug in. But other than that, that's the only thing I can do to help the cause at all. But thank you all for joining us. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma.
Bye-bye.